You're with All in the Mind on RN. I'm Lynne Malcolm. And no, that's not your phone, it's mine. Did it make you feel anxious? Today we explore how technology may be affecting our psychological stability. It's expected that by the year 2015, 80% of the world's population will have a smartphone, a tablet or a laptop computer. Our mobile devices connect us whenever and wherever we choose, by phone, SMS, Facebook, Twitter, you name it. We're in the middle of a digital revolution and it's all happening incredibly quickly. In fact, it's already hard to imagine life without our iPhones, iPads, BlackBerries and other mobile devices. But could they be fundamentally changing our behaviour and perhaps even driving us a little crazy? Psychologist and researcher Dr. Larry Rosen suggests we're in danger of developing an eye disorder.
Eye disorder is where technology is literally making us exhibit signs and symptoms of a whole bunch of psychological disorders, including narcissistic personality disorder, depression, attention deficit disorder, obsessive compulsive disorder, even a little bit of schizoid personality.
Larry Rosen is professor of psychology at California State University in Los Angeles and author of the book Eye Disorder: Understanding Our Obsession with Technology and Overcoming Its Hold on Us. Before we hear more from Larry Rosen, let's hear from a couple of young women about their relationship with their mobiles.
I'm Emily Jacobs and I'm 19 years old.
My name's Rebecca and I am 23.
Emily, how often do you check your iPhone?
Once every 10 minutes, maybe. Depends where I am. If I'm on the train, I'm on it all the time. But if I'm with people, less, obviously. I'm trying to be social.
Trying to be social, is that challenging to sort of stay off your phone?
Not really, but I think if there's a lull in conversation, there's a natural kind of inclination to go straight to your phone. For example, I was out with some people last night and at one point there was just four of us on our phones not talking, which is kind of sad, but we didn't really have anything to talk about in that current moment, so it was to the phones.
Yeah. What about you, Rebecca? What's your relationship with your mobile phone?
Look, we're in a bit of a codependent struggle. I've been pretty compulsive with it in the past. I'm trying to get better at this, like leaving it aside during conversation and stuff. Try and keep it in my bag when I'm with my boyfriend.
So do you feel like you want to change your behaviour a bit?
Yeah. I got asked the other day what my guilty pleasure was, and I realised my guilty pleasure was turning my phone off. So I've kind of come to the conclusion that I need to reassess my relationship with that particular item. Yeah.
Larry Rosen is recognised as an international expert on the psychology of technology and has traced our evolving relationship with it for over 30 years. What strikes him now is just how fast technology is permeating our society. And he says it's rapidly changing the way we are relating to the world. He and his colleagues have tested nearly 2,000 people of all generations to examine their psychological state in relation to their use of technology and media. Here's what they found.
Beyond belief, actually, every single psychiatric disorder can be predicted by use of technology. And it turns out that one of the main culprits is social media. And partially that's because we're doing it more, but partially it's because social media is really a palette to express our personality. And so if we have a tendency, say, to be a bit narcissistic, then what we would do on Facebook is a lot of postings about me, 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 and my thing that I did, and, oh, by the way, here's some new pictures of me doing this and me doing that.
So just describe to us the narcissistic personality disorder and then how it relates to behavior that might start increasing in relation to social media.
Sure. A narcissistic personality disorder is one that's characterized by a lot of egocentrism, a lot of grandiosity, I'm better than everybody else, finding people that you can use to make you look better. So this might be manifested, say, on Facebook by collecting friends. I have lots and lots and lots of friends. I have 1,000 friends. Look how wonderful I am. Or look at my laptop. It's all decorated and it looks nice. Or look at these photos of me that I'm posting on Flickr. Wow, look how much fun I'm having in my life. And so the narcissistic personality disorder, while people may not be exhibiting a full-blown narcissism, what they are exhibiting is more signs and symptoms of narcissism. And there's even researchers that have found, looking at, say, even popular lyrics in songs, that over the last several decades, the songs have become more narcissistic. The songs, instead of being about other people and love, are more about me, 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 look at me.
Do you notice people posting on Facebook that are just so obsessed with themselves?
Yeah. Definitely. If not themselves, it's where they're going and what they're doing. I have noticed a few people who will post something at every location they're at and post lots and lots and lots of photos, either of themselves or them with other people, but they always seem to be social 24/7, when obviously you realise they're not like that, but when they portray this, you know, online personality of being a very, I suppose, a very social person and a very, yeah, someone really into themselves, someone who's like wants to promote themselves, I suppose, then you notice, oh, they're having some fun, but you're just not sure about how much they're promoting themselves.
How much fun are they having if they're spending all this time
on Facebook
taking photos? I find that confusing. Yeah. Is it the technology that we can blame, or is it part of our essential tendencies that are just facilitated by the technology?
I think it's a combination of the technology and the way we relate to the technology, and also I think how fast the technologies hit our society and how little time we have to react. I think the technologies themselves have become incredibly engaging. The sites, the high-def televisions, the sounds, you can personalize everything to have different ringtones, different text sounds. It's really very appealing and engaging. And we know that the more appealing and engaging you make the technology, the more people are going to be drawn to it.
I get what are called push notifications. So anytime anything happens, whether that's an email, a text message, a Facebook notification, it will come straight up on my phone. Leaving my phone at home can cause a bit of stress.
Does it make you feel anxious?
Occasionally, yeah.
Do your friends think that you are particularly compulsive and obsessed with your phone?
Yes. Like, a lot of my friends are similarly attached to their technology, but others have said to me in the past that they found it a bit, like, can you just put that away while we're talking? I don't do it to be rude. It's just a thing that has started happening. So I'm very glad to have people who are willing to kind of call me out on it and be like, that's not okay.
You mentioned a number of different psychological disorders, and another one is obsessive compulsive disorder. How do you relate that to our use of technology?
Obsessive compulsive disorder is a very interesting one, because it's characterized very distinctly by overwhelming anxiety. So somebody who has, for example, a full-blown OCD might be somebody who continues to wash their hands because they have a fear of germs. Or, as Jack Nicholson did in the movie As Good As It Gets, continue to unlock and lock the door and unlock and lock the door and go back in and make sure the coffee pot is turned off 10 times, make sure the water is turned off. It's characterized by overwhelming anxiety. What we're finding in all of our research in a fascinating way is that we are all feeling anxiety about the pace and the connections that we have in our virtual world. For example, if I left my phone at home, I would be willing to drive 15, 20, 30 minutes home just to get my phone.
Yes, understand that.
Well, and what we see is people walking around patting their pockets and their purses, checking to make sure their phone is there. If you leave your phone someplace for a few minutes, you feel naked and empty without it. And one of the reasons that we're seeing all this is these are exact symptoms of people who have an obsessive compulsive disorder. We are being compelled to check in with our technology very, very often. And all of our research is showing that people, and it's not just young people, it's everybody, are feeling highly anxious when they can't check in with their technology.
Have either of you experienced or heard of phantom vibration syndrome?
No, but I can only imagine what that is.
Yeah, is that when you think your phone vibrates and it doesn't? Yeah, that's happened to me. Yeah. I didn't think there was a name for it, though. I just thought it was just like my bag moved. I thought it was my phone. That's happened to me before. It happened to me yesterday. I thought my phone vibrated in my pocket. I picked it up and it was fine.
Phantom vibration syndrome. Tell me about that.
Well, that's a very funny one because I'm not even sure that this is a true syndrome, but it's certainly an observation that in the only study I've ever seen that 70% of people state that at some time or another, they thought they felt their phone vibrate in their pocket or in their purse, but it wasn't vibrating. But what we do is we are looking at our phones, we are checking in with these smartphones all the time, all day long. So it's not surprising to me that a little bit of neuronal activity in the skin near our pocket might set off in our brain a little trace of anxiety that says, gee, somebody must be texting, calling, emailing, whatever. I better check on it right this second. And as strange as it sounds, most people will say, oh, this has happened to me, yeah, at least once or twice, sometimes more often.
So if we can just take two social media platforms, most common, I guess, Facebook and Twitter, is there differences in the way people respond to that and how different personalities tend to go down one path or the other?
That's a very interesting question. I've been actually doing a bunch of writing and thinking about the difference between Facebook and Twitter, and I've boiled it down to basically one statement. On Facebook, you have friends. And what that can mean is either you have friends that you want to include or you have friends that you want to inform. On Twitter, you have followers. And that almost sounds a little godlike on some level. But what you have is a variety of people following your every word. And what that does is that promotes this sort of sense of, well, it's all about me. The world revolves around me. And so I'm becoming what people who study this call a me-former. Not an informer, but a me-former, meaning I'm informing everybody out there, all of my loyal followers, about me. And that's what I think makes the social media so interesting to study, because it's just a platform. It can go either way, but there are some subtle differences in the way even words like friend or follower are labeled that can compel you to act in a certain way.
But there are positive uses of say, Twitter. Twitter can be a research tool, for example, and Facebook can be a space where people connect with each other.
I am one of the biggest geeks, and I use every single one of these social media, and I'm online all the time. And you're right, there are very, very positive benefits towards all of these. And I think, in general, most people use them in a very positive way. But what we're starting to see in all of our research is a trend towards using them in ways that are going to impact us negatively. Now, that doesn't mean, for example, that I think Facebook is bad. I happen to think Facebook is a marvelous social media tool to connect with people. There's always somebody there to talk to, somebody online. So it's got a lot of very connective benefits to it. I think, unfortunately, what happens to a lot of people, and particularly younger people, is they get hooked into this sort of way of presenting myself to the world. And I want to only present myself in a way where I look great. And I think that's where the stumbling blocks are.
You're with All in the Mind on ABC RN, Radio Australia and online. I'm Lynn Malcolm, and I'm speaking with Dr. Larry Rosen. In his latest book called Eye Disorder, Understanding Our Obsession with Technology and Overcoming Its Hold on Us, he draws on his many years of research and warns that we are all at risk of developing symptoms of psychological disorders as a result of the way we are now using technology and social media. As another example, he suggests that many of us are showing behaviour which resembles the symptoms of attention deficit disorder.
It really resembles symptoms of both the ADD part and the ADHD, so with and without the hyperactivity. So without the hyperactivity, what we find is the technology allows us, because of its engaging quality, to hyperfocus. Meaning if you're playing a video game and you were playing a video game, I don't know, 5-10 years ago, it would not be as realistic as it is now. And because it's realistic, you feel more immersed, more present in the game. And what happens is you start to exhibit signs of an attention disorder where you cannot pull your attention away from this game, and it compels you to play hours and hours and hours on end. The hyperactivity part often looks a bit more like mania. And the fact is that there's so many kinds of technologies out there that what most people find themselves doing is skipping back and forth from website to website to check their phone, to look at a page in a book that they were reading, to send a text message, and it starts to resemble the signs and symptoms of an attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, where you can't really focus on anything for more than a couple of minutes. And what we're finding from all of our research and research with other people is that for people, whether they're teenagers, young adults, older adults, our level of focus has decreased dramatically in the past 5 to 10 years. And we are now down to where we can focus for about 3 to 5 minutes on something before we need to switch to something else. And if you look at all the research, we most often are distracted by technology.
I had to get better at just like on the days when I can see a lot of information is coming through and I know I have various things in my own life to get done. I just have to just put it down completely. I did have someone ask me the other day, you know, you follow 700 people or something. How do you have the time to do that? And I'm like, well, you kind of develop this screening mechanism where you're flicking down your phone or you're flicking down your desktop and you know what everyone's avatars look like and you know who you generally want to hear from or who you're in the mood to hear from at any given time. And there's an unconscious screening process that goes on. Definitely. And that just helps you, like, sometimes you want to hear from your friends, sometimes you want to hear from the industry, and that kind of helps you just keep it all a bit under control, I think.
And there's been quite a bit of research done in the connection between depression and bipolar disorder and media. Tell me about what we know about that.
Well, it's a very interesting question because a controversy arose a couple of years ago when somebody writing for the American Pediatric Association talked about this concept called Facebook depression. Turns out that it was a little premature. There was no research on Facebook depression. But what we are seeing is research coming out now that is showing how social media does impact your sense of yourself and in turn then impacts either your level of depression or perhaps your level of mania. And what we're seeing in our research is that the more kinds of uses you make of social media, the more likely you are to exhibit signs of mania. And if you use particular parts of Facebook, like a lot of posting, a lot of liking, a lot of commenting, then you're often more prone to depression. And part of why they think that is because what you're doing is you're looking at everybody else presenting their wonderful lives on Facebook, and you're examining your life and going, gee, my life seems kind of dull compared to this person who's traveling all over and doing all these fun things and partying with friends. And so you end up feeling more depressed in comparing your life to other people's. The result that we just found, which I think is a little bit more interesting, is those people who have more friends on Facebook are less depressed. And we're exploring that because we think what happens is if you have more friends on Facebook, then you have a better chance to get a picture of how more people are expressing their lives. And not everybody's having a great time out there. Not everybody's happy. And you have more friends to compare your life to, as well as more people to talk to when you need some empathy and some support.
That's interesting because if having more friends on Facebook is beneficial, on the other side of things, it shows more of the narcissistic personality disorder type traits.
That's exactly right. And it does. It is predictive both ways. It is a dual-edged sword. If you have a tendency toward any kind of psychiatric or psychological disorder, I think what happens is these kind of technologies play into that and exacerbate it. And I think that's really what we're seeing, because bottom line, I mean, it's not either or. It's not that you have obsessive compulsive disorder or you don't. There can be a continuum of the anxiety that leads to obsessions and compulsions. And if you are somewhere along that continuum and you feel a little bit anxious anyway, the technology is so omnipresent, it's so appealing that you are going to start exhibiting those symptoms.
Larry Rosen says that one of the most interesting things that's happening in his research field right now is the improvement of brain scanning technology. Because of this, scientists are beginning to pin down what's going on in the brain when we engage with our digital devices and social media.
There's some interesting results. One, for example, shows that looking at Google activates your brain more than reading a book. And in fact, the pictures of the brain are amazing when you look at them. When you read a book, you activate small areas of your brain. When you look at Google and search, you're activating huge areas of your brain. So that activation is showing rather strongly. There's also research that shows that if we scan your brain when you're on Facebook, that it looks like you are getting a little shot of dopamine. And dopamine is the chemical in the brain that we translate into a feeling of pleasure. It's also the same chemical that's released into your brain when you have an addiction, say, to alcohol or to gambling, and you do the activity, or even if you think about doing the activity, there's a little squirt of dopamine there. So we look to see, is your use of a specific technology, whether it's your phone, whether it's the internet, whether it's movies, YouTube videos, it doesn't really matter. Is it impacting your work life? Is it impacting your family relationships? Are you not spending time with your family? Is it impacting your sleep habits? Because we see that a lot. So the question becomes, is it negatively impacting your life? If it's a true addiction, it will be negatively impacting your life.
Yes, it's been suggested that internet addiction could be included in the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, the psychiatrist's Bible, if you like. What do you think of that?
Internet addiction will never be put into the Bible, to the DSM. It's an interesting idea, and I think even the fact that they're raising it as an issue is important. There's a fine line. How can I define whether I'm using it too much? It's part of my world. And I think part of what's happened is we've really not gotten a handle yet on how we define an addiction to something that is so necessary in our lives. We're also starting to see that when you are continually checking your pocket for your phone, that you're activating areas of the brain that deal with anxiety. So we're starting to get a little bit of a picture that's showing more about what's happening inside of our brain. And in fact, that's the most important theme, I think, of the book I just wrote, which is, look, technology is highly activating, highly energizing. And what's really important is that you not get rid of it, that you use it judiciously, but that every once in a while, maybe every hour or two, you take a short break to calm your brain.
And Larry Rosen has identified a number of simple strategies you can adopt to reset your brain, as he puts it, and to avoid developing the symptoms of an eye disorder.
One of the things that I talk about a lot in the book is something called an e-waiting period, or an electronic waiting period. And what that means is whenever you write something, whether it's a text message, an email, a post on Facebook, don't press send, don't press post. Give it a minute. Do something else. Let your brain reset and then come back and ask yourself, let me look at what I wrote. Is this the way I want to portray myself? If I'm thinking I might be narcissistic, perhaps I want to count the number of times I use the word I and me and compare it to the number of times that I use we, they, us, them. And try to make a little bit of a balance there. If you use only I or me, you're going to look narcissistic. Learn by taking time and then asking yourself, what is the effect of my communication at the other end of the screen? Because quite honestly, you don't see the person and you don't know what impact your communication might have. The interesting thing about the brain is it does not take long to reset your brain. It takes maybe 10 minutes every couple hours. And there are lots of things you can do. There are studies that validate all of these. You can meditate for 10 minutes. That resets your brain. You can exercise, jump around for 10 minutes. You can listen to music. You can look at a picture book as long as it's art that you tend to enjoy. You can go out and look at nature. You can take a walk. You can talk to another human being, although it turns out that talking to another human being really only resets your brain if you're talking about positive things. But if you talk about positive things, that will help. You can play a musical instrument. You can learn a foreign language and practice for 10 minutes. There's all sorts of things you can do as long as you yank yourself away from the computer and the phone and give yourself 10 minutes to do something different, maybe every hour to 2 hours. I really believe that we're at a precipice right now. I think that we either address these issues and recognize what technology has to offer, as well as what technology can take away from us, or we're going to face the problem of continuing to exhibit signs and symptoms of psychiatric disorders. That can't be good, because psychiatric disorders are defined exactly like they are because they impact our lives negatively. It is reducing our brain power. It is reducing our ability to concentrate and focus. It's reducing our ability to relate to people in a kind, empathic way. And I'm not advocating giving up technology. I would never say that because I couldn't do that myself. What I'm advocating is that we pay attention to our brains and listen to what our brains are telling us, which is, wow, I'm overloaded. If I have to keep checking my pocket every 2 minutes to see if somebody emailed me, even though I know my pocket will vibrate if somebody emails me, or if I keep thinking, where is my phone? Where is my phone? Or if I keep saying, gee, I better get onto Facebook. I haven't been on for 10 minutes. Somebody might have posted something that I need to respond to or to like. Then we are facing a potential major problem. And I think that as we all retreat more and more into a life where our world is pretty much mediated by our smartphone, that we are at risk for having a psychiatric disorder. And my fondest hope is that what people do is sit back and go, oh, okay, this makes sense. I can give up 10 minutes every 2 hours. I can reset my brain and I can make it a common practice. And I find that once you get people to think that way, that it's not all that difficult to think about every 2 hours, take a 10-minute walk around the block. Every 2 hours, go get a cup of coffee and daydream. Let your mind wander. It doesn't seem to matter what you do, but as long as you reset your brain, then you have more capacity to process information, to maybe not spend too much time jumping from screen to screen, to be more careful about what you say when you send messages to people. And so I really would like to raise consciousness about the fact that it's really all in your mind, and you have control over your mind, and you have control over whether to highly activate your mind or to calm it, and you get to make those decisions.
Dr. Larry Rosen and his book, Eye Disorder, Understanding Our Obsession with Technology and Overcoming Its Hold on Us, is published by Palgrave Macmillan. And Larry Rosen will be in Sydney from the 21st to the 22nd of June to attend the Young Minds Conference. And we'll link to that on our website. And thanks to Emily and Rebecca today for their reflections on their behaviour and use of technology and social media. For more information and audio of this and all our programs, go to the website abc.net.au/radionational and choose All in the Mind in the drop-down list. And while you're there, add a comment to the page. What do you think about the effect technology is having on us? Have you recognised any eye disorders in yourself or others? Join the conversation on the All in the Mind Facebook page too. Follow us on Twitter, but don't forget to keep that brain calm. Our sound engineer is Jen Parsonage. I'm Lynn Malcolm. Thanks for joining me. I'll catch you next week.